Imagine a world where women no longer feel compelled to do it all, where the path to leadership isn't blocked by an impossible mountain of domestic responsibilities, where partnerships at home enabled true equality in the workplace. This isn't just a fantasy. It's the powerful vision Tiffany Dufoux presents in her groundbreaking work that has become required reading for modern professional women. Endorsed by Sheryl Sandberg and featured in Oprah's book club, Drop the Ball has sparked a movement among high-achieving women who found themselves drowning in expectations. As Gloria Steinem notes in the foreword, we've made progress democratizing external systems of power, but haven't yet uprooted the inequality that begins in our homes. The book arrives at a critical moment. Women comprise 50% of the workforce, yet still handle most domestic responsibilities, creating an unsustainable burden that limits their professional potential and personal well-being. Through her honest, sometimes painful journey from perfectionist to liberated leader, Dufoux offers a revolutionary approach to partnership that has transformed thousands of relationships and careers, including her own. From childhood, I was groomed to manage a home. When my parents divorced, I became the woman of the house at 16, cooking balanced meals, matching my nail polish to outfits, and excelling academically. These domestic duties seemed natural until they began conflicting with my professional dreams. Like most women, I felt unique pressure to succeed professionally while keeping my home running smoothly. We become what sociologists call the designated warriors. Even when not physically doing all the work, we're mentally managing it all. Our childhood homes provide our earliest coaching about domestic roles. My mother, despite escaping poverty and pursuing education, primarily managed our household while my father worked outside the home. Though my parents encouraged my ambition, the gender division was clear. Women were caregivers who served others. This pattern repeats even in progressive households. June, a successful sales director, felt she was failing at home despite her career success because her mother, an anesthesiologist, somehow managed to juggle two full-time jobs, her profession, and home management while making it look so easy. Beyond our homes, culture bombards us with messages about women's domestic roles, from the Flintstones to Disney princesses to religious traditions. Media portrays powerful career women as cold and detached with failed personal lives. Even young women just starting their careers already worry about having to choose between professional success and being a good mom. My drive for career success solidified when my parents divorced. Watching my mother spiral downward, becoming financially vulnerable, and eventually a victim of domestic violence, I vowed to maintain independence through a successful career. At Spelman College, I finally experienced the power of women supporting each other academically, a lesson that would prove vital later in life. Yet despite my professional ambitions, I unconsciously absorbed the expectation that I would be primarily responsible for managing our home. This contradiction between my career aspirations and domestic responsibilities would eventually create an impossible situation, one that countless professional women face every day. 8 years into my marriage and 6 months after my first child was born, I started my dream job, directing fundraising for a women's leadership organization. Unlike many new mothers, I was excited to return to work, passionate about advancing women and girls. I had negotiated good pay and a private pumping room. I truly believed I could do it all, excel in my career, support my husband's ambitions, raise our child, and maintain our home perfectly. That illusion shattered within 6 hours when I found myself in a meeting with painfully engorged breasts leaking milk through my suit jacket. My first day back was a disaster, kneeling on a bathroom floor, emptying breast milk into a toilet while crying in my drenched designer suit. On the train home, reality sank in. Something had to give. I couldn't outsource domestic responsibilities like wealthy women. We were just making ends meet. I couldn't quit my job. Financial independence was non-negotiable after watching my mother struggle post-divorce. Working part-time wasn't feasible financially, and I loved my career too much to scale back. Most women face this same dilemma. As we reach management positions, our biological clocks and family responsibilities collide with increased work demands. The myth of the ideally supported worker and expectations of extreme parenting create an impossible standard. You can have it all if you do it all. But doing it all is impossible, leading to exhaustion, stress, and illness. Research confirms this reality. 76% of wives who work full-time still do most housework, with women disproportionately handling childcare, bill payments, and household management. My resentment toward my husband, Kojo, stemmed not just from what he didn't do, but from the societal expectation that these tasks were inherently mine. Unlike professional accomplishments, domestic work brought little recognition despite enormous effort. Our society doesn't value care the way it values competition. When Kojo received a job offer from a top investment bank in New York, I felt an unfamiliar pang of jealousy. For the first time in our 11-year relationship, I confronted the reality that parenthood would impact our careers differently. Despite my heartbreak at leaving my promising career opportunities in Boston, I agreed to the move, feeling there was no other choice. It felt as though we'd been gracefully passing a baton in a relay race until our son was born. Suddenly, there was a hurdle in my lane, but none in Kojo.
Most modern women reject the notion that a woman's place is in the home, yet many still obsessively control every household detail, from specific detergent brands to organic milk preferences. I call this compulsive need to manage everything in a particular way home control disease, HCD, and I suffered from an extreme case of it myself. My HCD manifested when our son Kofi was a year old and had to travel with Kojo to Seattle. I packed their bags with precisely calculated supplies, typed up top 10 tips for traveling with Kofi, which read more like commandments, and micromanaged every detail despite Kojo being a perfectly capable father. I maintained a meticulous caregiver log, tracking Kofi's eating, sleeping, and bodily functions long after it was medically necessary. My obsession extended to every household task: clothes folded while still warm, dishes never left in the sink, mail processed immediately, floors cleaned early Saturday mornings, hangers facing the same direction, gifts purchased instantly, and mac and cheese only made from scratch. Even women less obsessive than me find themselves unable to delegate childcare tasks to their husbands, like Whitney, who couldn't trust her husband to pack the right snacks or choose appropriate outfits for their daughter. Home control disease stems partly from gender socialization beginning in childhood. Girls receive baby dolls and easy-bake ovens that teach caregiving and rule-following, while boys' toys encourage problem-solving and independence. The pressure continues into adulthood, fueled by Martha Stewart's empire and magazines promising quick perfection that isn't actually quick. We fear that failing at home means failing as women, though we're reluctant to admit this connection. Women's compulsion to maintain home control makes it difficult to ask for help, what I call the Lone Ranger syndrome. At work, this manifests as faith in a false meritocracy, where we expect recognition based solely on output rather than cultivating relationships crucial for advancement. At home, it stems from belief in false efficiency, thinking we should do everything ourselves because we can do it better and faster. This becomes a dangerous habit that holds us back, especially professionally. Since delegating feels like more work when we're overwhelmed, we soldier through, never freeing ourselves from the endless domestic to-do lists that keep us trapped in what I call the life go-round.
In late 2007, my world began spinning out of control. While outwardly projecting an Alicia Keys-style superwoman image, I was internally falling apart, losing weight, chronically exhausted, and overwhelmed. With Kojo traveling more for his banking job, I felt completely alone with my responsibilities. During one sleepless night, I called Kojo in London at 3 a.m., unable to quiet my mental to-do list. The life go-round keeps most working mothers in a constant state of inadequacy. According to a Real Simple magazine survey, 32% of women feel they wouldn't be taking proper care of their homes if they did less, spending their free time doing laundry, 79%, cleaning, 75%, and cooking, 70%, out of stress about unfinished tasks. This endless juggling has serious health consequences. Women with work-family conflicts experience higher cortisol levels than men and suffer increased rates of allergies, migraines, fatigue, anxiety, substance dependence, and cardiovascular problems. My resentment toward Kojo was reaching a breaking point. While juggling my career and home responsibilities, I joked to colleagues, "Bye guys, I'm off to work now," referring to my second shift at home. My friend Sasha inadvertently triggered a revelation when she called to congratulate me on securing a $125,000 donation, news Kojo had proudly shared with her. When I snapped at her about having to do everything around here, Sasha refused to validate my complaints, instead pointing out that Kojo was my biggest fan and suggesting I ask him for help. The breaking point came when I arrived home to find our son crying while our nanny cleaned his nose and Kojo sat watching basketball, completely unbothered. When he casually asked, "What's for dinner?" I exploded with rage, screaming, "You tell me!" The first time I'd ever yelled at him. I stormed off in tears, devastated that I'd broken my vow never to be a yeller like my divorced parents. In January 2008, life took an unexpected turn when Kojo came home early one Thursday to tell me he'd lost his job and the collapsing investment banking industry. Our financial plans suddenly evaporated. As the new primary breadwinner, I felt immense pressure to redefine my value as a worker, wife, and mother, knowing I couldn't manage alone. I initially gave Kojo space to process his job loss while maintaining my usual domestic workload, assuming he'd naturally take on more housework given his newly flexible schedule. This assumption proved wrong. Even when women earn more, cultural conditioning trumps economics in household labor distribution. Studies show that women who out-earn their husbands still do more housework. I knew something had to change. My mentor Margaret confirmed, "I needed clarity, Tiffany. You're all over the place, Tiffany. You've got to slow down and prioritize. You can't do everything." To delegate effectively to Kojo, I first needed to determine what truly mattered to me. To discover what truly mattered to me, I turned to books, mentors, and two transformative exercises. The first was Stephen Covey's funeral visualization, where I imagined people eulogizing me with statements like, "She was a true champion for women and girls," and "She believed in me and inspired me to believe in myself." From my son Kofi, "She was a good mom because she didn't confuse her journey and mine." The second was the reflected best self exercise, collecting stories from people who knew me at different life stages and noting recurring themes: passion, evangelism, authenticity, determination. My mother's contribution surprised me most. She recalled the day I hit a neighborhood boy with a hammer after he inappropriately touched me when I was 11. When his mother demanded an apology, my mother firmly refused, teaching me to trust my instincts and stand up for myself. This memory reminded me I'd lost touch with that fierce girl, prioritizing others' voices over my own. Combining these exercises revealed three considerations: my legacy, my innate gifts, and how I wanted to spend my time. After weeks of reflection, I gained crystal clarity about what mattered most: loving Kojo, raising a conscious global citizen, and advancing women and girls. Early in our marriage, Kojo and I had developed four questions that guided our decision-making at Crossroads. We created this couple's compass during a car ride in March 1998, inspired by Ghana's Independence Day celebrations and Kwame Nkrumah's words about creating our own reality. Our four guiding questions were: will this advance women and/or sub-Saharan Africa? Is this true to the values our parents instilled in us? Will this put us on a path to financial freedom? Will our descendants be proud of us? Knocking the rust off our couple's compass became critical to working better together at home, helping us keep sight of our larger purpose of leaving a legacy. Very few people can clearly articulate what matters most to them, not because they don't know in their hearts, but because it's hard to decipher meaning amid cultural noise telling us what should matter. I now had clarity about what mattered most to me: loving Kojo, raising conscious global citizens, and advancing women and girls. But I still struggled with logistics and motivating Kojo to pitch in at home. My breakthrough came during a management center course when I learned about focusing on areas where I bring the most value rather than just tasks I'm good at.
This economic principle, the law of comparative advantage, revolutionized my thinking. I realized what you do is less important than the difference you make. Applying this approach dramatically shrank my to-do list. I evaluated each item by asking if it represented my highest and best use in achieving what mattered most to me. Instead of 8 tasks I absolutely had to accomplish, there was now only 1 critical task for me and 7 others someone else could do. After careful reflection, I decided only 3 things absolutely had to be on my motherhood to-do list: carrying and birthing children, breastfeeding them for 1 year, and engaging them in meaningful conversations, plus making weekend scones after family negotiation. Everything else became eligible for ball dropping. I categorized remaining tasks into 3 groups: things I could laugh about having on my list, like marinate chicken, tasks I could creatively outsource, like asking my nanny to handle grocery runs, and tasks requiring Kojo's support. For the latter, I scheduled a deliberate conversation with Kojo, explaining what mattered most to me and asking for his help, not just as tasks, but as ways to help me fulfill my purpose. This approach, which I call delegating with joy, frames requests in the context of helping someone live their passion rather than just completing chores. With a new baby coming and Kojo relocating overseas for work, we prepared for our new reality. When Kojo agreed to manage our mail but never completed it, a pile began forming on our kitchen counter. For 4 weeks, I resisted handling it, even as his overseas stint extended. Despite my home control disease nagging me with worst-case scenarios, I stood firm. As the pile grew larger, I felt less responsible for it. None of my fears materialized. When Kojo returned to find 3 months of mail waiting, he was stressed but took ownership. The consequences included unpaid bills, missed birthday parties, and a parking ticket in collections. This watershed moment taught me that Kojo had a threshold for disarray, just higher than mine. I learned that even after delegating, a task isn't truly handed off until the other person feels responsible. After Kojo returned from Dubai, I realized we needed a new system for managing our household. During a work meeting, it struck me that women who excel as managers often abandon their professional practices at home. Good managers set expectations up front and communicate vision before execution. But at home, we often wait until after our partners have failed to explain what we wanted. I decided to apply workplace management techniques to our home life. I created an Excel spreadsheet listing every household task I could think of, from vacuuming floors to paying bills to coordinating childcare. Instead of defaulting to myself as primary home manager, I created 3 columns: Kojo, deliberately placing his name first, Tiffany, and crucially, no one. When I showed Kojo the blank spreadsheet, he was immediately engaged after his mail experience. He even pointed out tasks I'd missed, like replacing the Brita water filter. Kojo surprised me by adding many more responsibilities I hadn't acknowledged: family travel coordinator, botanist, chief technology officer, investments manager, math teacher, and even Kofi night nurse, revealing he'd been quietly handling our son's nighttime wakings while I slept. Our management Excel list, MEL, revealed Kojo handled about 30% of household tasks, far more than the 5% I'd assumed. We divided responsibilities primarily by location, since Kojo worked overseas, with him handling tasks that could be done virtually. The no one column was equally important, acknowledging some things simply wouldn't get done. By fall 2008, with Kojo back in Dubai, our household management system was working smoothly, despite the ocean between us. Mel had transformed us into true all-in partners, 2 people working full-time while co-managing our home. This new reality erased my old narrative about Kojo being useless domestically. I realized my resentment had been misplaced. Kojo wasn't my adversary, but my teammate against cultural standards that made me feel I had to do everything. I understood that men like Kojo have been conditioned by the same gender expectations as women. Research shows 60% of business school male graduates expected their careers would take priority over their spouses. When men think differently, like Max Gyrison, who stepped down as MongoDB CEO to support his wife's career, it makes headlines. Most men expect women to handle office housework both at home and in professional settings. During Kojo's year in Dubai, I managed surprisingly well, thanks to my village of support. My college friend Toya Taylor exemplified this support by moving into our apartment for the entire year. My support system extended beyond Toya. My mother-in-law Irene flew in from Ghana for weeks at a time. Kojo's friends took me on weekend Costco runs, my neighbor Michelle helped organize baby clothes, and I developed a first name relationship with our super, Lionel. Building this village requires intentional action, asking for help, and making needs known. Sometimes support comes from unexpected sources, like the story of Cecile and Rhonda, two single working mothers who formed their own all-in partnership by becoming roommates. Their arrangement allowed them to share housing expenses, cooking, and childcare while maintaining separate family lives. By spring 2009, the novelty of Kojo's Dubai assignment had worn off completely. Parenting a newborn without a partner nearby was exhausting. With my maternity leave ending and our live-in helper Toya accepted to graduate school, I faced the terrifying prospect of managing full-time work with two young children alone. Fortunately, Kojo's work was transitioning him back to New York. During my morning runs, I formulated a new success equation for work by maximizing the freedom my all-in partnership afforded me. I developed the 4-go-to strategy to address the leadership pipeline problem for women, which typically breaks down at middle management just when many are starting families. With women representing 53% of entry-level corporate jobs, but only 14% of executive positions, a new approach was essential. The 4 go-tos are practices that advance women's leadership when integrated into daily routines. 1. Going to exercise, building stamina. Exercise improves stamina, essential for juggling career, family, and community. Exercise increases norepinephrine, moderating the brain's stress response, making me a more relaxed wife, mother, and worker. Just 30 minutes a few times weekly boosts endorphins, increases BDNF, a brain-derived protein aiding decision-making, and improves productivity. 2. Going to lunch, building networks. Just as our village supports our home lives, our ecosystems help us thrive professionally. Research shows successful executive women rely on a complex and diversified network of social support to thrive professionally while maintaining fulfilling family lives. Our professional ecosystems need several types of talent: sage mentors, who provide wisdom and guidance; peer mentors, from our cohort, who offer accountability and mutual support; sponsors, who use their social capital to lobby for our success; promoters, who provide quick support when needed; and mentees, who keep us relevant and grounded. When women execute the 4 go-tos, men see the fruit of their labor. As Kojo admitted, though he didn't enjoy doing more domestic work, he remembered we married to make impact in the world, my passion for advancing women and girls, his for advancing sub-Saharan Africa. His all-in partnership and my implementation of the 4 go-tos resulted in my biggest career promotion, becoming president of the White House Project.
After becoming president of the White House Project in 2010, my career skyrocketed. I joined LeanIn's launch team, became chief leadership officer at Levo, and my public speaking platform exploded with invitations to Fortune's Most Powerful Women, TED Women, and BET's Leading Women Defined. The recognition came ironically after I'd retired from trying to be perfect, focusing instead on what mattered most to me. Despite my drop-the-ball evolution, motherhood remains the final frontier. When my 6-year-old son suggested I should trust him to walk without holding my hand, I realized how deeply the drive for motherhood perfection runs. Nearly 80% of millennial mothers believe being the perfect mom is important, and women face harsher social judgment about parenting than men do. A Pew study showed 56% of Americans believe today's mothers do a worse job than mothers 20 years ago, compared to 47% saying the same about fathers. This pressure intensifies through social media, where parents showcase only their best moments, creating a competitive domino effect. The reality gap between economic necessity, most women need to work, and cultural expectations, women belong at home, creates guilt, despite numerous studies showing no significant differences in children's outcomes based on maternal employment. On a February evening before Valentine's Day, I discover I've forgotten my children's Valentine's cards for school. Rather than designing elaborate crafts like my old self would have, I grab red paper and lollipops from Staples. My children protest, candy isn't allowed at school, and I'm sent away to pack for my trip while they start writing names on cards. The next morning, I find 32 adorable cards with pennies taped to them and the message, "Being your friend makes good sense," that my husband helped create. This experience reinforces that all-in partnership is the most practical solution for ending women's exhausting life go-rounds. Society can't afford to have half its talent pool stifled by unrealistic demands. Women need permission to do just 50% of what's on our to-do lists and expect more from our partners. Most successful women leaders today have spouses who are all-in partners at home. Almost half of Fortune 500 women leaders have spouses playing significant domestic roles. Though women rule at home, we must first release control before others can take the reins. Achieving true partnership requires more than delegation. It demands a shift in beliefs and expectations. Powerful women like Abby Disney and Shelley Lazarus demonstrate this by defining success on their own terms, acknowledging imperfection. My kitchen faucet perfectly illustrates how far I've come in overcoming home control disease. When I noticed it leaking one hectic morning, I simply texted Kojo, "Kitchen faucet leaking, please fix." Despite being in Dubai, Kojo handled it immediately, and I returned home to find a new, functional, but decidedly unstylish faucet installed. My first instinct was disappointment, mentally planning to replace it with something more aesthetically pleasing. Then I caught myself. This was exactly why we'd created our MEL, with facility maintenance director in Kojo's column. The unfashionable faucet became a daily reminder of my progress. Accepting that done is another person's perfect was a small price to pay for a dramatically improved quality of life. We must stop treating demands on our time as non-negotiable and release control of half the things filling it. Working mommy martyrdom is yesterday's news. The path to true equality, both at home and in the workplace, begins when we learn to drop the ball.